Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm Nan Evans, your host for Nature Now for this last week of March and early April. I can hardly believe that. My guest this week is Carolyn Woods. Carolyn is an AmeriCorps member who serves at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center as the Natural History Exhibit and Volunteer Educator. This January, Carolyn gave a workshop on nature journaling for volunteers at the Marine Science Center. I found out about the workshop too late to attend, but Carolyn agreed to come on Nature Now to talk with all of us about nature journaling. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thanks, Nan. It's great to be here.
Should be fun. But first, let's listen to the mystery sound and talk about some of the things we've observed this past week. So here's a bit of a hint. Look and listen for these little creatures in places where tangles of brush and shrubbery mix with open or grassy areas. An especially good spot is the Chinese garden area of Fort Worden. Speaking of Fort Worden, walking along North Beach below the high bluffs of the state park, I spotted a glorious bald eagle last week soaring at the treetops. I always stop to gaze in awe at these majestic birds, and this one did something I had never observed before. He or she flew onto one of the top branches of a Douglas fir, broke off a dead stick with its beak and talons, it used the two, grabbed the stick and its talons, and flew back into the woods with it, presumably to its nest. Eagles do use the same nest year after year, and each year build it up with more sticks. Looking down along the beach where we were walking, Wendy Feltham then spotted several bits of smooth brown algae with a number of tiny yellow donut-like objects. They were egg masses from a lacuna snail. The lacuna, sometimes called a clink shell, is a small little herbivore, looks a bit like a periwinkle, but a little more delicate. The egg clusters are laid on seaweeds, seagrasses, rocks, mostly in the low intertidal zone. And the egg clusters are initially this lovely pale blue or green, and then as the eggs age, they turn kind of a yellow or tan. Well, of course, walking through the woods is a wonderful way to experience the coming of spring. I had a great day hike along the Steam Donkey and Maple Valley trails at Dosie Wallop State Park last week. It was a real delight to see the blossoming red flowering currants, the Indian plum, the choke cherries, salmon berries are out, and trillium along the trail. And then walking along the sandy area behind the beach south of Point Wilson, the yellows of the Oregon grape and the pollen-laden blossoms of the big-leaf maple provided their clear evidence of spring. And looking down in those back dunes, there are mats of really lovely, contrasting purple and blue flowers that I learned are of the flower called the Maiden Blue-Eyed Mary. And Carolyn, I should ask you, what have you seen in the last week or so?
Earlier this week, I was sitting in Better Living Through Coffee on the waterfront having my morning coffee, of course, and I looked out the window and I saw, swimming through the water, a large seabird that I wasn't sure I recognized, and so I took a closer look and it was a common loon.
Ooh,
swimming
nice.
Very near the shore, yeah.
They sort of look like almost submarine kind of birds.
Mm-hmm, they do,
they
yes.
They travel so low in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Please do share, all you listeners, anything you observe. You can simply send us an email at naturenow@kptz.org. Let's now talk more with Carolyn, because another way to take notice of what we see in the natural world is by journaling. And that's why Carolyn's here, to talk about nature journaling. I was sort of recently perusing the internet, and I came across the following description of nature journaling. In Keeping a Nature Journal, that's a popular recent book on the subject, the author Claire Walker Leslie put it simply, quoting, "Whereas A diary or personal journal records your feelings towards yourself and others. A nature journal primarily records your responses to and reflections about the world of nature around you. So, Carolyn, let's start there. How do you even begin to describe what nature journaling is?
Well, I think Claire did a great job of beginning to describe it there. I'd also like to add that it's different from a sketchbook in that a nature journal is based on your own observations, and so the goal is more accuracy and detail than just making a pretty picture. For me, there's also a connection to conservation. Nature journaling is a great way to increase your appreciation for the variety and complexity in the world around you, which I think is also key to developing a sense of stewardship and wanting to conserve nature as you experience it.
Well, and I noticed Carolyn brought some of her journals in. She's got some lovely drawings in there. Does a journal need to be in words or drawings or what?
Well, the great thing about nature journaling is that it doesn't need to be anything except what you want it to be.
I like that answer.
Yeah, so if you're more interested in writing about what you see around you and scattering some illustrations in among your writings, that's one way to do it. My approach is starting with a drawing or an illustration and then adding labels and other details to it, things that I can't get down on the page with an image.
So when did you first start nature journaling, and sort of what triggered that?
Well, I've been filling sketchbooks as an artist since I was a very small child, but I first started keeping a dedicated nature journal just over a year ago. Last January, I moved to California to work at the San Francisco Bay National Wildlife Refuge. I was spending my days surrounded by new and unfamiliar plants and animals, and I wanted to learn about all of them. So I started bird watching and was really struggling to identify all the different waterfowl and shorebirds that winter in the bay, and especially in their winter plumage, mm-hmm. They can all look very similar. So, of course, my first impulse was to start drawing them, as I naturally do. I was noting which markings would allow me to differentiate, say, a dunlin from a willet or a snowy egret from a great egret.
So that probably improves your observational skills a lot, doesn't it?
Absolutely it absolutely does, because once I can get the basics down, once I've drawn them, I can go even further and I can notice more details that I wouldn't on a first observation.
Interesting. Well, I also have to say, Carolyn and I, just before we came to the studio, we're at a talk at the Marine Science Center about sea otters. And my little notepad is full of sort of little written notations and things I found interesting. Carolyn opened her journal, and there on the last page of it, her notes, which are wonderful sketches and watercolors with notes that actually pulled out a lot of the pieces of information that I was writing down. So it was so fun to see that talk through someone else's experience so recently. So it's like, wow, what a great thing to do.
Well, everyone knows that saying, a picture is worth 1,000
Absolutely.
Words. Well, it's much easier to draw a picture than write 1,000 words.
Oh, that is true. But I have never practiced to even learn how to draw. I'm still with the words. If someone were kind of vaguely considering a nature journal, why would someone want to start nature journaling?
Well, a nature journal can be a really useful tool to achieve a lot of different goals, or it can be an end in and of itself. I know people who use journals to document their travels or their work in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to capture details that appeal to you in a very personal way, things that a photo can't necessarily capture. I know other artists who use their journal as a tool to help them improve their drawing skills and to make studies to prepare for larger art pieces in the studio at home. Drawing from life is just so helpful, and the more convenient you can make it for yourself, the more often you will do it, and the greater your improvement will be.
It sounds like it has really enriched your life. Can you tell me a bit about how that happened?
Absolutely. Nature journaling regularly has really strengthened my skills as both an artist and a naturalist, as an observer. In the San Francisco Bay, I was surrounded by wildlife, plants, and animals I saw that were totally new to me, and in documenting them, I got much better at identifying what I saw and making meaningful observations. Nature journaling also helped me develop my passion for birding, which is now something I do pretty regularly. And now every time I see a new bird or a bird displaying some interesting behavior, I feel compelled to journal about it, to draw it, to write about it. And I'm so thankful for also all of the wonderful people that I've been able to meet and spend time with thanks to our shared hobby of nature journaling.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. When I think of the subject as great as all outdoors, as they say, nature journals then would lead themselves to, as you said, a wide range of expression from painting to writing to poetry. What advice do you give to someone who is considering nature journaling but just really doesn't quite know where to start?
To get started, a good first step is to think about what you want to get out of nature journaling personally and what interests you about the natural world. Maybe you're a birder like me and you want to keep track of the birds that visit the bird feeder in your backyard and see how that changes maybe with the seasons from year to year. Or maybe you want to document the flowers that are blooming in your local park, like what's happening right now since it's finally spring. Or maybe you want to learn more about the strange natural objects that you see washed up on the shore when you're walking on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or anything else that's significant to you. Having a goal is a great motivator, but of course none of that matters if you don't have a pen and paper handy. Making sure that your journal is comfortable and convenient to use is really important. The easier it is to pull out your journal and draw or write something, the more frequently you're going to do it. If you carry your journal everywhere, you can make it into a habit. The best time to start a nature journal, of course, is today.
Oh, of course, of course. When I think about famous nature journalists, of course, I think of writers like John Muir or Meriwether Lewis or John James Audubon. I mean, even Rachel Carson and Aldo Leopold. And I do have a few of my sort of favorite contemporary, and I would call them nature journalists. Kathleen Dean Moore and Terry Tempest Williams are some of my favorites. Do you have favorite journalists that you enjoy looking at or reading their material?
I do. Other than the ones you already listed, one of the nature journalists who inspires me the most is John Muir Laws. He's a contemporary artist. He lives in the Bay Area in California and has a really great blog online with journaling tips about everything from creating a portable watercolor palette
Which Carolyn has right here, portable watercolor palette.
In an Altoids tin, so you can stick it right in your pocket or your bag. He's also got philosophical posts about the human mind and what your thought process is as an artist. He also leads lots of workshops focusing on field drawing and painting techniques, real practical skills. And he's got complete videos of those posted online if you'd like to
look.
So
it's John Muir Laws.
Correct.
So I could just go Google that, huh?
You absolutely can.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's published several guides to nature journaling and drawing birds. On the California Native Plant Society's website, they've got Opening the World Through Nature Journaling. It's a really great curriculum resource. It has lots of prompts and prompts for further observation.
I could tell we could go on a long time, and I could start flipping through your journal, which I already did, and going, wow, look at this stuff. But we're about to run out of time. I did find that if a listener around Port Townsend is interested in nature journaling, you might want to check out an offering through the Cedar Root Folk School. In June, artist Hannah Viano will guide a journey into the art of nature journaling. And you should go check out the Cedar Root Folk School's website for more information on that. Let's see, I think we need to hear that mystery sound again. Well, that, of course, was the sweet sound of a white-crowned sparrow. White-crowned sparrows are year-round residents in our area, and it's one of the very easiest sparrows to identify. The smart black and white head, the pale beak, and the crisp gray breasts combine for a very dashing look. The song of the white-crowned sparrow is one of the most studied songs in all of animal behavior. Curiously, different subspecies across the country sing clearly different songs, or perhaps different dialects, but they're all recognizable by the sweet whistling introduction, a succession of jumbled whistles, and a buzz or trill near the end. The young male white-crowned sparrow learns the basics of the song it will sing as an adult during the first 2 or 3 months of its life. It actually does not learn directly from its father, but rather from the generalized song environment of its birth neighborhood. Carolyn, will you help me share some news of upcoming events?
Absolutely. On Thursday, April 7th, go with the Native Plant Society for a walk along the Duckabush River Trail to look for early spring flowers in bloom, such as the blue Oregon anemone, the spectacular chocolate lily, and white fawn lily. Plus, the group will visit the Jefferson Land Trust's newly acquired parcel of land along the Duckabush, which is providing protection for almost 40 contiguous acres of rich wildlife habitat. The Native Plant Society's website has all the details. Make sure you go to the local Olympic Peninsula Chapters tab for information on the field trip.
And on Saturday, April 9th, Admiralty Audubon is sponsoring a South County field trip to East Quilcene Bay, the Big Quilcene River Fish Hatchery, Mount Walker, and the Dosiwallop State Park. Check the Admiralty Audubon's website for more details.
Also on Saturday, April 9th, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is offering a class on spring landscaping for birds at the Dungeness River Audubon Center in Sequim. And, as a heads up, be sure to save the dates of April 15th through 17th for the very special Bird Fest 2016 sponsored by the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society.
And that's always a fun event. One last thing, this upcoming weekend, April 1st through 3rd, the Port Townsend Marine Science Center exhibits open, and that includes the aquarium. So they're open to the public from 12 to 5 each day. And I happen to know that the tanks have just been refurbished and replenished with creatures from around here. And for you slightly longer-term planners, do check out the Port Townsend Marine Science Center's website, because the Protection Island Spring Migration Bird Cruises are going to happen. It's April 23rd, but you need to register ahead of time for that. That's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news of the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Be sure to scroll down the long list of podcasts to find the collection of Nature Now programs toward the end of the list.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Closing music is Nature, performed by The Samples.